Oh, good. Okay.
Madam Chairman, I want the record to reflect that Harshman's actually here on a Monday.
Oh, yeah. Representative Harshman, we're glad to see you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. Happy New Year, and thank you for being here. Today we're going to start with the Department of Agriculture, and we have Mr. Farnio with us. Yes, you are. So.
Okay. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you very much for allowing us the opportunity to sit before you today and present our budget. I would like to take just a moment and talk about our agency a little bit and introduce some of the folks that are with me. The Department of Agriculture consists of six divisions, one being the Administration Division, our Consumer Health Services Division, which deals with meat plant inspection and food inspection, along with pools and daycares and those types of things. We have our Technical Services Division, which is regulatory in nature as well, similar to the Consumer Health Services Division, in charge of all weights and measures devices in the state, the Plant Industry Section dealing with things like seed and fertilizer and feed, and the predator side of the equation as well. Our Analytical Services Lab in Laramie services both the Department of Agriculture as well as consumers of the state, making sure that things are what they are supposed to be. Our Natural Resources and Policy Section deals with a lot of policy work dealing with the federal government, also just state issues as well, dealing with agriculture, BLM, Forest Service, National Parks issues, those types of things. The State Fair is under the Wyoming Department of Agriculture up in Douglas, Wyoming, and I think as all of you are aware, we'll be celebrating our 100th anniversary this year, so we're excited about that at the Wyoming State Fair. And then along with that, running with the Department of Agriculture, we have the Wyoming Beef Council, which deals with the beef checkoff. They are separate, but we work budgets through the Wyoming Department of Ag. With me today, sitting on my right, is Doug Miyamoto, the new Deputy Director of the Wyoming Department of Ag. Doug is a Rawlins native and has been with us now for, I think, 7 months, 8 months. We're thrilled to have him. He comes to us from the Natural Resources Conservation Service. Prior to that, he spent some time at the State Engineer's Office, and we're just pleased to have his level of expertise that he brings. Julie Cook, our Administrative Manager, is also with me at the table. We're pleased to have her as well. And sitting behind me, we do have our managers of our divisions, Dean Finkenbinder, manager of CHS, Hank Uden, the manager of Technical Services, Mike Leith, manager of Analytical Services Lab, Chris Wickman, the Natural Resources and Policy Manager, James Goodrich, the director of the Wyoming State Fair, and Ann Whitman, the Wyoming Beef Council. Well, thank you for giving me an opportunity to just address you a little bit this morning. I appreciate that. If you have any questions about our agency before we get into the budgets, I'd be happy to try to answer those, Madam Chair. Okay. Very good. We do have a handout for you. I believe that you have it. I want to make sure that you do. It looks like this. It was delivered, I believe, on Friday. This details our exception requests in somewhat detail. It's titled 2013-14 Exception Budget Request, Wyoming Department of Agriculture. You go through, and with that, if you have that handy for your questions, on page 12, I believe we begin with our first budget with the admin section. And okay, Madam Chair, on this budget, we do have one exception request. But in this budget, as well as throughout the budget of the Department of Agriculture, I think you have seen this in other budgets as well, in other agencies, but you will see that there is a reduction in our budget if we go ahead with the Chief Information Officer's request to do things differently with IT, and with his agency. So please take note of that. But with that, if we'll start moving to page 13, our first exception request is for IT upgrades. And this is for data processing equipment in the amount of $139,366. There are printers to field staff and some other things.
Madam Chair. Thank you. Mr. Farinow, is it page 12? Is that where we are right now?
Start at page 12. The dollar amount is on page 13, Senator Von Platter.
Okay. Those numbers at the bottom of page 12, are they just shifted over one or something? I'm trying to figure out 100,000 and 20,000 and 20,000.
Director Farinow.
Madam Chair, if I can have Julie Cook answer that, please.
Madam Chairman,
Ms. Cook,
on the bottom of page 12 details the revenue that the administration division has collected over the last couple biennials and are projected. Mine lines up. I'm sorry if yours doesn't. For the 9-10 budget, there was an extra O put in there that we asked to be deleted, and it did not, so it should have been 10,850.
Yeah. Good. And Julie, can you move your speaker a little bit closer to you, the box, when you guys speak? Great. Thank you. That answers it, right? Okay. Good. So, Brett, I'm assuming we'll get corrections on those things.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Thank you. I don't know if I can handle that.
We don't need to have corrections on a narrative page. It shows up as an error on the it's correct on the
line
code or on the spreadsheet, and that's what we would go by.
Yeah.
But you don't need to correct it.
Good. All right. Continue, Jim.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 17 is our Board of Agriculture budget. There are no exception items in this budget. Page 19 is our brucellosis task force budget. We have no exception requests in this budget.
Chairman, I think you hit, let's talk about the IT upgrade, 13.
Page 13, Senator.
Right, at the top of 13.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, which page? Are we back to 13?
Right.
To the IT upgrade. Hey, Senator, is your question, or what are we looking at on the request?
Is this to replace existing equipment?
Senator, Madam Chair, yes, it is to replace existing equipment. With this, you'll see that there are some printers in there. We do have a significant number of field staff that are housed in their towns, many of them in their homes. They have printers. Part of their inspection requirements as well, Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas, are having another small set of printers where they can print those out when they go into a restaurant or a place where they're doing a scale. They can print that report out for them.
What's your replacement schedule?
3-4 years. It says in the notes
every
4 years.
Madam, 3 to 4, yes. That's our answer, 3 to 4. Is that,
yeah. What I'm wondering is if we can, so you say 3 or 4 years?
Julie.
Some are three, Madam. Some are four? Or
The schedule is typically four. Madam Chair.
Do you want to expand on that, Julie?
Yes, Madam Chairman. We have a couple high-volume printers that are done on 3 years. Those are some of our larger laser jets that are in the main office. Everything else is on a 4-year.
What I'm wondering is, maybe go to our staff, is that as we start before markup, hey, Brett, talk to A&I folks. Before markup, could we have begin the development of a spreadsheet that would show all exception requests in the 100, 200 series? And then for the IT, I guess the question is we'll see through the day from reading last night. It looks to me like there's some people who are on 3-year service, some you're on 4-year service, some you're 5-year service. And maybe if we can get IT folks to break it out as to what it costs to put everybody on a 5-year, everybody on a 4-year, and everybody on a 3rd year. But what I'm thinking is if we have a, if we get IT to, or if you guys on the budget side will give us all the 100 series, all the 200, 300, 900 series, somehow we could see what the total dollars requested are above the standard. And then within the IT dollars broken out in some category so that we could develop a philosophy as to what we want to do before we begin the markup. So we have the IT guys come back and said, look, and now that Bill's back in. Bill, what I was thinking about doing is before markup is if we get a spreadsheet that would from A&I that would show us, you know, all of the increased requests over the standard that are in the 100, 200, the various series, and then by series, and then within IT, I wonder if, what I'm wondering is if we can get from the CIO a breakdown of, you know, what would it cost if we had a 5-year implementation, 4-year replacement, and a 3-year replacement. I mean, we might even want to break it down by laptops, computers, desktops, and printers, something to have a philosophy as we begin into markup, what that ought to be.
Bill?
So then as we make our motions, we would say, we might just do a generic motion, say, okay, well, we're going to go from a 4 to 5 years, or we're going to go to 3 to 5, or whatever.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I know a lot of that information is stuff that either we've been working on, and as far as the exception requests, that I need to talk to you about the funding on series, and I don't want to drag you guys into that conversation right now, but there are some issues there. And as far as the IT stuff, I think Brett's shop, and Flint's shop, they've already been trying to summarize some of that stuff, and I think, you know, some of those requests, Mr. Chairman, we can fine-tune that.
Well, I guess the question is even like this, so we have a 3-year replacement for some things, 4-year replacement for others, and maybe going back to the Department of Ag, is on those replacement cycles, are those something that you develop internally, or do you go to the CIO for a statewide replacement schedule?
Mr. Parnio?
Madam Chair, I believe we've developed those internally. Is that correct, Julie?
Madam Chairman, we have developed them internally. However, we do have two staff that sit on the ITC committee with the CIO's office, and they have developed our plans with what that committee has been looking at.
I guess, you know, it used to be when we were on longer replacement schedules, we would sit down and talk about the really whether the desktops are serving the purpose for now, so that I think most private folks. I mean, we find in my office, it used to be we're on 3-year, and now we're going 4 and 5 years without any incidents of computers are just running better. And my question is, are we on a schedule that just was developed, or are we on a schedule that you're actually seeing failures and you're having to replace them? And are you seeing failures at a rate that would force you to make replacements?
Julie?
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, our request does not include any computers, and we are on a 4-year computer replacement. We are this year looking for printers. With our high-use printers out in the fields, that we are seeing that those last about 4 years, and then we start having a lot of maintenance issues, and the maintenance agreements do no longer cover those. And so that has been our how we developed that schedule.
Well, part of what I'm wondering is with respect to that, then, let's take the maintenance agreements. If the state goes out as a large purchaser to Xerox or whoever your folks are and say, look, we want a longer maintenance, don't you think we could command our own maintenance agreements? If not, we go to another provider. So we can extend the maintenance. And maybe we have a reserve fund for replacing printers that actually go, if we said, okay, we're going to stretch them out another year, and then for those printers that do go dead, we have a reserve to go out and replace them, but we don't have to replace them all at a set schedule necessarily if we create a different type of a replacement program.
And Senator Nicholas, the state purchasing department is the one that does the contracts for all the printers, computers, and software. And so they're the ones who negotiate that with all the suppliers. And so I really don't have a lot of information for you on that.
I guess, Madam Chairman, I'd like to bring in CIO to talk specifically about extending the lives of this equipment, figuring out what really needs to be replaced, creating a reserve fund for product replacement that does go fail out, but really extending. I mean, it's true, you walk through state governments and you see some of the finest stock of office equipment. I mean, you know probably better than anybody, Senator Peterson, but it looks to me like we can begin to look at whether we can implement stronger policies that get a little more life out of this equipment.
Brett, do you have any comments or questions?
Madam Chair, I'll follow up specifically with Flint Waters, and he is scheduled to be up here on Thursday as well for his specific hearing. But I'll give him a heads up with respect to these issues, and we'll work with LSO staff on the requests that have been outlined.
And Senator Nicholas, is there anything else we want to add to the list for Mr. Waters since he's coming in on Thursday? Okay. We'll make a list and get that to you by the end of the day, too. Okay, great. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Senator Von Slater.
If that subject's over, Madam Chair,
I think we're done for the moment.
Okay. I think we're on the brucellosis aspect here. The question is this $45,000? Of the 125 that was pre-appropriated, I'm trying to align that with that document we have on brucellosis. Was that already spent, the original 125, and then this 45 is just an additional amount? We've got maybe $5 million or something, I think, appropriated for brucellosis, so I'm trying to see where it all is.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Platern, this $45,000 is administrative money that goes to run the brucellosis task force. This specifically goes to the meeting aspect of it. When that group gets together, that's where this money goes.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Go ahead. Continue.
Madam Chair, page 21, we have our pesticide disposal budget. There are no exception budget requests in this line. Page 23, we have wildlife livestock disease research partnership. We do have an exception request in this budget. On page 24, you will see we are requesting $250,000. This request, last year, if you'll recall, Senate File 91 was one-year funding at $125,000 for this disease research partnership specifically to non-brucellosis diseases. So basically what we were really focusing on at the time was sheep pneumonias and a couple others, but non-brucellosis specific. This request was to continue that research and biennialize Senate File 91. The governor is recommending denial of this line item. Okay.
Continue.
Page 27, we have livestock market reporting. We have no exception requests in this line item. However, Madam Chair, if I may, there has been some new information that has come up. I have spoken with the governor's office, and I also spoke with Senator Nicholas the other day regarding this issue, if I may take a moment to explain the problem that we're facing. The federal government has, for the last 25 or so years, has had a market reporter on staff that has been in Torrington, Wyoming. They are pulling the funding. There is no longer a federal market reporter in Torrington, which is a great concern to not only the barn there, but also the other markets, both livestock barn markets and then the markets that come off of those throughout the state. I have I've been approached by that industry, and again, I've talked to the governor regarding the opportunity, or if there is opportunity to use a small amount of general fund dollars to contract a reporter in that office, and then also help cover things that are going on in Riverton, where the other major market is. We're thinking about the dollar amount of $30,000 in order to keep that pretty important marketing aspect going on in the state of Wyoming.
I'm sure, is the $30,000 an annual number or a biennial number?
Madam Chair, it's a biennial number. What we are looking at doing, if you look at this line item, you see that there's, I believe, $20,000 in this for the biennium. What this line item is it's kind of a self-taxing system for the Barnes. Basically, they pay in when they've participated $100 per sale. Those costs have gone up, so the idea that has been bounced back and forth is paying, I think, $125 or $135 per sale, but splitting that contract with the Barnes, having them still put in a half of that, and then the state picking up half of that to try and ensure the service.
Madam Chairman, when you go out to, you have these state and national publications for livestock sale reports, who's collecting that information? How does it get collected and presently besides this issue?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, this is the mechanism for that ultimately to happen. The reporting system has folks in the local barns that collect that data. They then send that data to both Greeley and, I believe, St. Joseph, Missouri is where our group operates out of. There's still the mechanism in place in Greeley, Colorado, to do the collecting of the data if they receive it. One of the big concerns for cattlemen in Wyoming is that Torrington Live is one of the markets that they base the index off of at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So we are risking losing a lot of valuable data.
Mr. Chairman, is this data that the livestock barns cannot send themselves, or?
Madam Chair, it probably is possible, Senator Nicholas. I think the question becomes one of making sure that it's correct information that's getting sent. I think that's where the government has come into play in having those market reporters, whether it's been a state reporter or a federal reporter, it's to make sure that everything is above board.
Well, my question is, why is the federal government eliminating that funding if they require the reporting? What discussion has been there?
Madam Chair, I don't know. I have not been privy to those conversations, why they have decided other than their severe budget problems. I don't know that they require the funding. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange is an independent, it's not a government entity, but they certainly need the information to help them run their markets. But probably more important to the state of Wyoming is, you know, when somebody picks up whether it's over the radio or off the internet or the Wyoming Livestock Roundup, and they can see what fat cattle are selling for, or even hay at Torrington, what range conditions are, it helps them set their local markets and make sure that they're on par and that they aren't leaving money on the table as well.
Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, I'm not so sure that we couldn't do something. If the CME needs this information for their own benefit, let's try approaching them and see whether or not we can get them involved as far as paying part of the bill or footing part of the bill. It seems like it's being left up to us. And I would think you could do a web-based reporting program easier or cheaper than the $30,000, but again, I guess the integrity of what's being reported is, and a third party is where you're heading to as far as having a state employee essentially, or a state contracted person do the gathering and the reporting of the numbers. So, but I don't know why we couldn't at least get a hold of the CME, and I'm sure that they are aware that this is probably happening in other places besides Torrington, Wyoming, I would assume. Mm-hmm. So we maybe should look at it, I would hope.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, I would agree. I think that it's important to make sure we look at all sources of possibility and make sure that all players that have interest in this are paying part of the bill if we can do that.
Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Director Furnio, in thinking about this possibility, would there not be the same kind of issues, you know, with the Chicago Mercantile Exchange? It seems to me like we need, as an industry, this governmental participation in order to keep from having either the sellers or the buyers or the market itself having a potential of corruption, quite frankly. You know, the market paying for the data it receives might be, I'm not finding the right words to articulate what I think is the problem, but it seems to me like that's a piece that we would be losing if we do not continue to have some governmental participation in this system of data collection and making sure that it's accurate to all parties concerned.
Madam Chair, Representative Wallace, I think you make a very valid point. The biggest concern from our agency perspective, where we are involved in this already, is the integrity of the market and the transparency of the market. The point is very well taken. I think any time you do ask somebody to pay, at least the appearance can be there of them shifting data, whether it's on a study or something else. I don't want to accuse anybody of doing that. I understand, but the integrity is vital. At the end of the day.
Go ahead, Phil.
Chairman, I guess, Jason, why can't we just assign the task to you guys to take it? I mean, all your employees, you ought to have one employee who could undertake this task.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, currently we do not have an employee at the Wyoming Department of Agriculture that does market reporting. The system that has been in place has been one of contracts with people that are in those local barns. It would certainly be taking an inspector or someone away from the duty that they're currently doing and doing that. We're, I believe now, don't hold me on these numbers. I'm trying to recall when I talked with Sean and Lex Madden the other day, I want to say that they said 93 sales they run through, not counting their video sales. That's, you know, 100 days basically plus the videos that you have to have someone on site with the sale throughout it. And then also we would have Riverton, who has participated in our current program on the contracts. Torrington has not very regularly because they had the federal person there. But we would have to cover Riverton, and they're, I would say, probably half that number. They're not quite as large as Torrington Live. You also have sales running out of Buffalo and Glen Rock. So we have people all over. It would be all over the state, Senator.
Well, but I'm talking about, I mean, if you consider going back and said, look, folks, we need to get the data. You guys collect the data, email it into us on every sale. We create a statute that says, makes it a crime if you report the wrong information, and then you collect it and take it from there. Is there, will that not work, or have you given consideration to alternatives to how you could do it with your existing staff without having to go out and hire more people?
Director.
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, that exact scenario I have not given a lot of thought to. It's one that I certainly can do some analyzing over, though.
To do that and give us an update, but it seems to me that if you need legislation that says, look, sales barns, you're going to collect the data, you're going to email it into us, we'll assemble the data, we'll reissue it, we just want to know that's accurate. Frankly, I have confidence that your ag guys are going to give you good data. All of the ag community uses and relies on this, but maybe there's a way to skin the cat without hiring more people.
Mr. Director? Okay. Representative Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Would you let's kind of step away from the detail here for just a minute, and would you sort of go through for us the jurisdiction between yourself and the Livestock Board on these kind of issues? I mean, it seems like there might be some crossover or some potential for redundancy here, and kind of give us a sense of what you see your role is as opposed to what the role of the Livestock Board is.
Madam Chair, if I can ask for clarification, Representative Wallace, just on you said these types of issues, are you talking specifically market reporting, or would you like a broader statement?
I'm talking about anything dealing with livestock.
Okay. All right. That's a big bite to take there for me, Madam Chair and Representative Wallace, but I will certainly try. Certainly the Livestock Board has jurisdiction on issues pertaining to trade from the standpoint of they are responsible for the brand issues and those types of things as they cross lines. They also have their segments where they are dealing with the health issues, which we do not typically. As far as authorities go, we have the state veterinarian that works for the Livestock Board, so they certainly have the authorities on that those issues dealing with transport and also marketing. Jumping into this one specifically, I don't know that authority is the right word. What we have done with this is we have certainly worked with livestock barns in the past to develop the system that we have now, which is that of a self-taxing system. To my knowledge, and I will have to look at statute, I don't know that I have regulatory authority to stop or start market reporting. There certainly is some marketing legislation out there that gives me some abilities to work within those markets, but the level of that authority is not, it's not something where I can go stop the barn, I don't believe. So we certainly do have a lot of crossover. I think getting to your broader question, Representative Wallace, is we work together quite closely with the Livestock Board, whether it's dealing with animal disease issues. For instance, as you look at the, if we jump back a couple pages where we were talking about the wildlife livestock disease issues, we sit on boards like that with brucellosis. We work very closely with them because they are I guess, disease issues that face all of us. There are areas on those specifically where they have the health officers that they have far more authority than we do, but we certainly participate. And I know that that's a very broad answer to your question, and I apologize for that, but trying to get there. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Is there any other area in your agency where you are dealing with something that's specific to livestock?
Madam Chair, I would say where we deal with livestock, our Consumer Health Services Division, they manage in the realm of meat plants. Mm-hmm. So, of course, we're doing the inspections there, both on the live animal and then after the process, through the process, but then also on the carcass. So we do have touch there. We have touch on livestock with our scales systems. Certainly we have the authority there to make sure the scales are accurate and making sure that buyer and consumer, or consumer and seller, are getting the appropriate weight on animals. And Doug or Julie, am I missing other areas? The Wyoming State Fair, we show them. How's that?
Go ahead. Thanks. We get to talk to the Livestock Board a little later today. Mm-hmm. But I think that one of the things that we will be discussing with them, of course, is their new computer system and their ability to really modernize that system that they've been looking to for years. And it strikes me that this particular marketing reporting problem is a logical addition to that system because they're already going to be dealing with transfer of ownership issues and brand issues at the sale barns. This could be just another piece of that puzzle that they're going to be taking on.
Okay. Go ahead. Madam Chair, I think that's a good point. I mean, I guess when we start looking at who can take over this role, you have the Livestock Board, you have yourselves, Department of Ag. The other issue is that A&I collects some of this data already so that it comes out in A&I publications as statistics. When you see, I know a lot of this information does get factored into the economic analysis. So I guess, Jason, if you talk to bring everybody together and figure out how we collect and who's the best, what's the best receptacle, maybe the College of Ag could do it. They got plenty of money.
Well, and Director, I guess the other question that would be critical is just the turnaround for the need of the information, of the data, how that impacts, you know, the sales overall as you're speaking about the, you know, Chicago commodities market, et cetera.
Certainly, Madam Chair and Senator Nicholas as well. I think we can do that analysis. I will certainly put our heads together. I'll get together with the Livestock Board and Dean Gailey back here behind me and some others, and we'll talk about what the best way to do. The timeliness of that reporting is critical, and it is incredibly critical. Those are very dynamic markets, even locally. And, again, I would say, you know, the most important thing is the local. The entire state of Wyoming, as well as Western Nebraska and Northern Colorado, look to that Goshen County market to settle a lot of things. So
there'd be a lot of dead air if we didn't have that report.
That's right.
Good. Okay. Any other questions on this subject? All right. Let's continue.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. On page 29, you'll see our organic handler program. We do have an exception, a budget request in this. This is a B-11 issue. This is actually a grant that we do receive from the federal government to work in the organic handling section. We're asking for $20,000 for program setup, and the governor has recommended approval of this request. Page 32, this is a similar situation, former B-11. We are asking for $30,000 on a federal grant. This is for organic producers as opposed to the handling portion of it. These are grants that go to producers that are involved in organic production. And these are federal dollars that we have received. We're reflecting the change from the B-11 process into the budget.
Go ahead, Senator Von Platen.
Thank you. Could I have a little understanding of priority 19 and 20? Are they the same thing? What's the difference between those?
On these two that I just went over, Senator, the one that we're looking at right now, this money goes to producers, people that want to are currently involved in the actual production of organic things. The one prior to it, the handlers, that is more dealing with making sure that you have the opportunity to have touch on keeping the regulation line in place for organic. So the one goes to the producers, the other goes to people that are saying, I'm going to be an inspector to make sure you're following protocols of the organic program.
Madam Chair,
go ahead.
I think that's the two words I missed. One has handler written in it, the other has producer written in it. Okay. Otherwise, they're identical, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
I guess I have a fundamental question, and that is really more to our staff. So you get, I take it these are federal grants that are available to create these new programs?
Right. Madam Chair, they are federal grants. These are not new programs, however. The newness is that we used to handle it through the B-11 process, and we're bringing it into our normal budgeting process because we have received them on a very regular basis and foresee continuing to do so.
Well, Madam Chairman, here's the issue that I'm having is that at the time you create an expense organization, so you give it a brand new division, unit, and fund, to say that these are important enough to deserve themselves in the budget, the notion is that, from my standpoint, that's one half step closer to say when the federal dollars go away, we're going to expect that the dollars be replaced. When we B-11 dollars, frankly, we just figure they're out there. If you get them, that's your own business. But when they're gone, they're gone. When we begin saying, okay, here we have a brand new program that's federal, we're now, what your acts, well, let me just stop there for a minute. I guess, who gets to decide that we get to create a new expense organization for a B-11 dollars such that they now get the dignity of their own unit?
Mr. Jones?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, essentially there were a number of these conversations associated with the development of the governor's budget. And in a number of instances, you'll see not only an incorporation of these grant dollars or these prior B-11 dollars in this manner, but you'll also see in some respects the elimination of some programs depending on the availability of those federal funds. I guess the short answer to the question is the governor made a decision to incorporate these as a unit into the budget as proposed by the agency.
Well, I mean, if the agency proposes it, let's go back to you. Why would you propose creation of a new, I mean, is the answer simply because they've been, you've received a lot of them repeatedly and it's too complicated to do a B-11, or why do these deserve their own unit numbers?
Ms. Cook?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As the Budget Office stated, there was many conversations that was held between the Budget Office and various other departments as well as ourselves on the fact that the current administration would like to have more transparency within the budgets. And the Budget Office let us know that there are some that, since we've been getting them for so long, this one about 4 or 5 years, that they thought it would be give you, the legislature, as well as the general public, a better view of what the department's actual budget is. And so in cooperation with the Budget Office, we looked at, and you'll see two others as we go through our budget, two others that we're including within our budget, trying to have them become part of our budget. As far as these two programs, if the federal program were to go away, we do not believe that this would be a program that we would asked to continue. It's just a program that's offered through the USDA to organic handlers or producers. And in, like I said, in cooperation with the Budget Office and the Governor's Office, we were asked to put some of these through, again, for the transparency issue.
Chairman, I understand the transparency issue, and there's different ways to do that. I mean, you could put them in different expense organizations, but we just got over the issue with respect to the marketing position. And once you get your own sheet of paper and a budget, then it's notwithstanding we sit here today and you make a promise that if these dollars go away, you'll never come back. 3 years from now, when we're all gone and there's a sheet there, it's a lot easier to advocate for the restoration of those dollars when it's got its own sheet. And it's sort of a recognition that somehow that budget is important.
Madam Chair.
Senator Bonsleder.
You know, I can use the play the ignorance card here again, but I'm trying to understand this as far as if it's in the budget, can't you do a B-11 anytime during the year unless we are reading every B-11 that comes in the mail to us, which, by the way, I think they should stop and email them. Aren't we?
A lot of trees.
Yeah, boy, it is. And it's great reading, by the way. Isn't it easier for them to slide a B-11 through than it would be to actually put it in the budget? You know, this is my ignorance on this question.
Well, the funds would have to be available, but Mr. Jones, would you like to speak on that B-11 process?
I guess I'm not, Madam Chairman, I'm not sure I understand the specific question. Is it easier to do a B-11 than to have it incorporated into the budget? Is it an accountability question? Well, certainly, Madam Chair, Senator Von Flater, and certainly with this process, it does come before this body for appropriation of those funds. The B-11s do go through a screening process. We do provide that information to the Legislative Service Office, obviously. But that being said, I mean, certainly the scrutiny of the appropriations process with respect to these funds does provide for greater transparency, as indicated.
And
I'll argue. I mean, you can argue two sides of this coin, and that's this, is that if it's a B-11 process, then the executive branch has to make a decision each time that it authorizes the securement of those funds, that this is a warranted program, and that it thinks that taking the federal dollars as an appropriate state end, and it's not going to create or, but ultimately the executive branch then has 100% responsibility for what it goes out to secure. Transporting the B-11 process into the legislative process says, okay, now we're legislatively going to authorize the agency to continue taking these federal dollars, and we think that apparently 4 to 5 years of B-11s is sufficient enough to justify our ratification of that and importing it into the budget. And, you know, if that's what you want to do and you think this organic handling program is so important that it gets in the budget and not have to go through the B-11, that's okay. I mean, you could do it. But there is a transition. The transition is one is an executive function. The executive branch takes full responsibility, and now we're being asked to say, from now on, you don't have to do the B-11, and we'll be responsible. And it's as, I mean, with respect to the issue about transparency, I don't agree. It's all in the paper. How many people are going to go look at this budget versus a B-11? But what's being asked of the legislature is that we say, hey, anytime that the executive branch chooses to create new automatic appropriations for federal programs that have been established for 4 to 5 years, we're just going to say snap, and that was it. And I'm not sure if that's a good policy. I understand the transparency, but there's the other side of it is if you want to pull down every federal dollar it is that's available, and we're going to essentially ratify a 4 to 5 year decision because the federal government's been doing it, that's fair enough. You look at Department of Ed, we could do this for every, there's a lot of B-11 dollars that come in there that we just say, hey, that's an executive function, you stand tall for it. But there are policies being made here, and I just want people to recognize policies are being made. This is an automatic appropriation. Now the B-11s are not going to be called upon, and the governor's no longer going to have to, and his staff will no longer have to say, yeah, we'll take these federal dollars.
Okay, well, thank you. Senator Meyer, and then Representative Stewart and Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, I guess I want to go back and flesh out a statement you made earlier that if these federal dollars were not available, it's a program that you would not recommend to the legislature in a subsequent year of being funded. Is that a correct characterization of the statement you made?
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Meyer. I think that the characterization should be that on this particular program, if it were not for federal funding, we would not be moving forward looking at doing this. We do this because there is a federal program that offers us the opportunity to play here.
Madam Chairman, I guess my question would be a little bit to the process then. Could we have a footnote in the budget that would bar further federal fund B-11s if that basically, if we found, as in this case, we had a program that we would not fund ourselves, that we don't think is worthy of funding ourselves, but it's got federal money in it, so we'll just go ahead and spend the federal dollars because the federal government is so flush. I mean, I'm wondering if we have a footnote that would just say that, okay, we're going to take this out of the budget and we're barring the B-11 federal funding for this program. That's a question that I would have. Just curious to, you know, ask your guys' expertise or the budget office if that's a possibility as far as barring the use of federal funds in this particular area.
Well, the Market Reporter is an example that if they don't have the federal dollars, they're not able to support it and need to figure out a way.
Well, the question is twofold. One, first of all, you cannot be 11 funds that don't exist. So if they're not available, you can't be 11 them. And with respect to the other question, that is, could we legislatively bar the executive branch from seeking B-11 funds in certain areas? I think the answer is, yeah, we set the policy. So if you want to create in the budget a directive that
no executive branch employee shall secure funds for X from the federal government, sure, we could do that. That's a legislative prerogative. That's be my view of it. So, but the only issue here is, I mean, if it's a B-11, it's only you can only B-11 funds when they become available. And then the next issue is, at what point do you say, look, these funds have been B-11 for an appropriate amount of time, that we want to create their own expense organization and essentially prevent or eliminate the requirement to do a B-11. So now the executive branch no longer has to do B-11s for this, and the governor doesn't have, each governor does not have to make the decision, do we want to take the dollars or we don't. And it's a policy decision that's not to be made cavalier. I mean, if you want to just say, I mean, there, believe me, I would think that there are a lot of agencies that would love to take all of their B-11s and put them all in the budget so they'd never have to do another B-11. And there's an exercise in determining what becomes an expense organization.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, my question, the way this is worded, these $20,000, does this become then a part of their standard budget going forward, or can we put a footnote that would say their standard budget remains zero and they need to come with an exception request for this spending authority every 2 years?
Mr. Jones, we could do that, correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, yes, actually, and you will see something along those lines reflected primarily in the Department of Health budget if you've been through that at all. There are a number of B-11 programs where specifically it's noted that the inclusion of it into the budget is a one-time occurrence.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question on the program itself. As a grant through the federal government, does this need to go through our State Department of Ag, or can the producer actually apply to the federal government for this cost assistance? And then also, you've been being 11 this since, is it 09 since it began? Can you give us a breakdown of how much it's utilized, how much is used? Do you have to send, revert back what you don't use?
Ms. Cook?
Madam Chairman, the program can only be applied for through a State Department of Agriculture. For the producer grants, all 50 states participate. In the handler grant, it is not a 50-state participation. And I'm not going to have the exact number, but I'm going to say there's 12 states that are allowed to participate in the handler grant, the way the federal legislation was written. As far as the handler grant, we have had much more limited use of it. We get a $10,000 grant each year, and the handler grant was only used to the tune of about $3,000 this last year. Within our producer grant, we receive $15,000 a year, and I just closed out our last grant, and we spent about $12,000 of those dollars. And yes, whatever, we only request the money once we have expended it, so it's a cash expenditure basis grant.
Good. Okay, go ahead.
For these grants, who physically gets the dollars? Are you passing through? If people apply for them, and do you expend them, or does somebody else actually apply for the grant and then use the dollars?
Madam Chairman, the actual producer or handler applies through the grant process in cooperation with the Wyoming Business Council, who promotes the program. The Wyoming Business Council receives the application, makes sure all of the federal requirements are met, approves it, send it over to the Department of Agriculture for a review. We then process that on the WOLF system and send it to the producer or handler.
Can you give us an example of somebody that might use these dollars?
Yes, we have a, Madam Chairman, a wheat producer in Laramie County who runs a total organic wheat operation, and they become and go get certified, and then once they're certified, we pay up to $1,500 cost share, half of their application fee to say they're certified.
Other questions on this program and the process? Okay, good. Thank you. You can move on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 36, I believe, starts our consumer health services budget. We have no exception requests in this budget. Page 41 is our technical services budget. We do have four exception requests in this budget. On page 43, we have building needs. We have needs to fill our building with our new weights and measures laboratory. We have a request of $205,137, looking to put the equipment in there so that we can continue our process of making sure our weights are what they are supposed to be, as well as those for other states. Our move-in date for that laboratory is February 13th, and Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, pursuant to our discussion, I think that was the question you asked me the other day, so we would love to have this funding immediate upon signing of the budget bill for those reasons, so that we do not have a break in service. The governor is recommending one-time funding of the $205,137.
So for everybody, your request then is to have those funds effective immediately?
Madam Chair, Senator Nicholas, yes.
Madam Chair, just curious what happens to that old equipment. You're moving out of a building, leaving something, so just curious if there's any value to that.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Flatern, we do have some of the equipment that will be coming with us. There are some of the old balances, though, that will not survive. This is very fine-tuned equipment that's been there for quite a while, so we do have some issues with that. I will ask Mr. Uden to maybe address this question in a little more detail. However, there are some of them that we just feel are not going to be able to make the move.
Mr. Uden?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, some of the equipment, as the director referred to, will be remaining with the building. It is structurally adhered into the structure. The other parts of the equipment are antiquated, maybe that's the word I want to use, that should we try to attempt to move them, because of the high degree of accuracy that these devices, these balances have to achieve, they would not survive the move. Other items on the list, such as infrastructure uses, workbenches, everything in the existing structure at this time, including storage units, have all been homemade. And then the other part of the larger parts of the equation in our request are monitoring equipment, hardware, software that interfaces with the existing computer equipment to monitor the environmental conditions in that laboratory so we can maintain our recognition of that laboratory with the federal government and work towards full accreditation.
Madam Chair, so I guess the answer is they're junk.
I'm not even sure they're antiquated.
Madam Chair.
Yeah, we could start that archival process. Thank you. Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does the SBC review this type of a request?
No.
Thank you.
All right. Yeah. Continue. Thank you.
Thank you.
Let me just stop for there a second. When we get to markup, one thing is that we'll talk about is that it, in the event that the old facility is sold, and so the old facility is next to a rail spur, it's got some value. It's also, I think we've talked about whether there's a buyer interested in it. And so there will be sale proceeds that typically would go into general fund. And when we get to markup, I guess my proposal will be that we take those funds and put it in the capital area renovation account. I mean, that money's got, we actually, you recall, had mm-hmm. the debate over whether or not to pay for or require the liquor folks to pay for the new facility. We paid for it out of general fund. So in this instance, these, what they're telling us is they become a fixture, they're a valueless fixture, but the real estate itself has value. And if we do nothing, those monies would typically just go into the general fund. But I think, is that right, Bill, that if we sell a state property, does the money go into the general fund?
Mr. Chairman, I think it... if you're talking real property, I guess I'm hesitant to give a blanket answer on that because it kind of depends. You know, some of the state lands and so forth, when you sell those, of course, they go to the various accounts that they're set up for. And I would imagine in certain cases buildings might be the same way, but I'd have to check into it.
Well, let's answer that, because particularly in this issue instance where we had a debate, we paid out a general fund for the new liquor establishment, and I certainly want to make sure that those dollars don't, for example, go back and become available to the Liquor Commission or somebody else because we bought the new facility. And what I think we ought to propose is that if that facility is sold, that the dollars go into the capital construction renovation account. And if that happened, you could easily take $200,000 out of that to pay for this equipment. But having said that, $200,000, what's the big deal? We'll debate this in there. But one of the things on my notes is to put in if you will remember to develop that we cover the issue of what happens with the sale of that property. So we find out, first of all, what would happen if we sold it, and two, since we use that money, since we paid for the new replacement building for these folks, can we revert those dollars into the capital construction renovation account?
Right. Mr. Chairman, or Madam Chair,
mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
That's right.
And Mr. Co-Chair, I think it seems to me like the general fund, anytime you appropriate general fund money, you can do anything you want to with those reversions. So, and, you know, your specific example with Department of Revenue and Liquor Commission, you know, part of that discussion was about whether or not to use Liquor Commission revenues, which really, it was taken out of one pocket and putting in the other pocket because those are general fund revenues.
Well,
so
the question was, will you do it before or after their taxes paid? Because we charge to them, I mean, there's an overhead charge and then there's a taxable charge.
Right.
And we start off, the JAC did an amendment to take it out of the overhead, which would increase the operational cost or what it costs you to buy a bottle of alcohol,
right.
And we took it out of our revenue side.
Right.
But now if we sell that property, we just want to make sure we put those proceeds, we either let them just go pay to the general fund, but one other option is to put it in the capital construction renovation account.
Right, Madam Chair and Mr. Co-Chair, and we did have that. We did have some similar language to that before. That any of those monies that would revert, that's where they would go. And I think, in the vast majority of these cases, that's going to be fine.
Okay, continue, Jason.
Thank you. The next request is for a scale truck in the amount of $236,150. This is looking to replace an existing scale truck that is 18 years old. As far as the truck and chassis are concerned, the test weights and dolly are original equipment, and they're over 30 years old. The governor is recommending denial of this request.
Go ahead, Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You do a great job on justifying its existence or need for it, the new one. So priority 11, is that related? You talk about, and I'm skipping ahead for just a second because it does talk about maintenance and fuel increases. And so I assume the scale truck is related to that very closely. Being an older vehicle, burns more fuel, maintenance has gone up on it. So by denying 2, and I believe denying 11, sort of double dipping there or adding to the hole you're finding yourself in. How often do you use the scale truck?
Madam Chair, Senator Von Flatern, we use these seasonally is the wrong word. We use them on a very regular basis. The issue becomes these are very large trucks, and we're dealing with large scales such as livestock scales, so we use them annually for several months out of the year, but there is a downtime there because of weather, not being able to get some of those scales. But on this particular one, if Mr. Uden can give us an exact response, that would be good.
Hank?
There we go. On this particular unit,
Jason, if you shut yours off, that would help.
On this particular unit, it would replace out a current 18-year truck. It related to the maintenance and the fuel line item. That would be a budget line item that would be extended over all 4 trucks that we have. The use period of these on and off are used year-round. Primarily for the intense part of the year, we operate them from March through November to check the livestock scales that are located all across the state, every county, primarily in the ranch. One of our other units is primarily dedicated toward larger scales, such as truck scales at the mines, grain elevators, those type of facilities.
Can I follow up, please? I guess we need some hours of mileage. I mean, are they used a working year of a couple thousand hours? Are they used, for 100,000 miles and maybe only 20 jobs? Some kind of comparison on that. So it would help with your justification. I do like the fact of not touching lifting, which is the single biggest injury. It'd be lifting and slips and falls or your biggest cause or worry for injuring your employees. So if there's some real justification there, and if it's used 3 times a year, well, you could probably get by with picking something up that weighs 80 pounds or 40 pounds. But if it's used 5 days a week for 6 months a year, then maybe we should start looking at a little more automation in this system.
Madam Chair, we will provide that information.
Okay, good. And we have Representative Esquivel and then Wallace.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. That's what I wanted you to elaborate a little bit more on, was the type of injuries that you have had with this vehicle and how many injuries have there been?
Madam Chair, with the 4 existing units, in my recent memory, we've had 2 hand injuries with loss of, one was a finger, the other was a hand, but they have recovered. Or he did recover most of the movement back in that hand.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I understand that part of this need is being driven by these federal changes, which are really yet another federal mandate that is requiring what. I've received several calls from ranchers complaining that trying to get the scale trucks in the spring and the fall when they really only use them once a year, but it just doesn't fall within the time period, complaining about the extra dollars that was being imposed on the state of Wyoming and the really unnecessary need for that. Is there any way around that? Can the state of Wyoming avoid that and go back to the common sense? You show up once a year and do the scales when it makes good sense and call it good?
Madam Chair, in regards to that, we did work with the industry and with the congressional representation. They did. The original proposal was to bring it down to a 6-month inspection cycle. On a two times on a calendar year. They split the year into half and said you had to do it either or, which unfortunately that was did lead to a lot of confusion, where if somebody sold in June, they'd have to have their scale checked again in July in some cases. When we worked with the delegation and the industry, they had, Packers and Stockyards is the ones who oversees that federal law. They did amend that to be an 8-month inspection cycle. So that did significantly help. We do have that we are having to check through the winter months, and we're starting that inspection cycle now. We were looking at up to over 300 scales we were going to have to do a second time. With that amendment and that change in the federal rules, that did drop that down now very significantly to where we're, if I remember correctly, about 102 scales that would have to be done a second time. We felt at that time that we would be able to absorb that into the existing program.
In regards to the rest of the comments on the governor's saying that they denied it because the ending balance, you would have $264,000 to use for these requests. Can you speak on that? Am I correct on that? On page 46? That's the, sorry, that was the $60,000 for the fuel.
Madam Chair, I just for clarification, we're talking about priority 11 now on the maintenance fuel, correct?
Right.
They are saying that there would be an ending balance of $264,000, of which that we could take $60,000 in general funds, or the $60,000 instead of coming out of general fund could come out of our budget. I think their numbers are accurate. The issue is that these are still, you know, $60,000 of unforeseen, especially the fuel costs. And I know today fuel is down again, closer to probably the $2.50 per gallon fuel. However, the projections that I'm reading in the papers are now talking about, and now this is retail gas, but $5. And if gasoline goes to $5, I'm guessing diesel will be right in there. So we do still have a serious concern about being able to do it. But I believe the numbers are accurate.
Okay, good. And Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Madam Chair, just to clarify, the recommendation specifically recognizes that they do have room to absorb the proposed cost within their 200 series of their existing standard budget.
All right, thank you. We can continue.
Okay. Let's make sure. Okay. The next request that we have is, again, another B11 issue. This is a Forest Service grant that we receive at the department, and this is a $300,000 grant, and this deals with fighting weed control near federal forest lands, and this is asking to bring that into our budget process.
Go ahead.
I guess what I'd like to do is test your theory that this is a transparency issue, the notion being that transparency requires that we put it in. Now, here you're putting it into a Section 600, which is a reoccurring section, a $300,000 into a Section 300 for federal dollars that all will know next time is your Section C, your standard budget for your Section 600 is going to be now 600,000. Is that right? Yeah, it'll go up to 650 instead of 300. And so when you begin to talk about transparency, nobody will ever know again from now on. It's just a sections 600, 300,000. Nobody. I backed up a raise of hand as if anybody on the appropriation knows what the other 350 is for. So I guess the question is, what's the other 350 for? Is that general fund or federal fund?
Madam Chairman, the original 350 that you see in there is general fund. and that goes for some weed and pest block grants, as well as a biological control grant for things, biological controls on weeds and grasshoppers for those types of issues.
Now, with respect to this 300, is that used on private land as well as public land?
Senator Nicholas, Madam Chairman, the funding through the grant goes to weed and pest districts who work in cooperation with landowners and with state lands to go ahead and do the weed control. That,
well, I guess my point there is as soon as you embed it into a Section 600, then you develop a constituency for it. And then when the funds go away, the constituency comes back and says, we'd like you now to supplant it with general funds. And it's, I guess you'd have to agree with me, it's not very transparent putting it. I mean, now, before we were at least giving it to the expense organization, now we're adding it to a Section 600, which is an ongoing, recurring budget item. And from this will be the last day that anybody ever remembers what's in that Section 600.
Madam Chair. I guess my question there would be, wouldn't it show up at the bottom as a source of funds, $300,000 federal? If it went away, it'd have to show up as an exception budget, and then the question would be raised as to why it suddenly was an exception. Then they'd have to explain to us that there was a federal fund being supplanted by general fund now. So I hopefully yeah. Catch it.
Yeah, I mean, it has to be caught. If the dollars go away, they have to ask for replacement. But what you've done is you've acknowledged this constituency that these are funds that are in the budget now. No longer have to be a B-11. Now, your point is well taken that the federal funds line item will reflect 300. But as you go through other budgets, I challenge you to figure out which code names or codes are federal versus general fund just from these books. I mean, you could ask the staff, and they could probably tell you, but in a lot of instances, until they break it down, it's hard to even know which ones are federally funded and which ones are not. You know, folks, I don't know. I mean, I think these are important things to think about, and they get rolled in, and this is how it happens. I guess one question is, how long have these funds been going on, and what's the forecast for the future?
Ms. Cook.
Again, Madam Chairman and Senator Nicholas, these funds we have been receiving for 6 years, and we have been told, as we've done with many of our federal grants, worked with our agencies, and we're told that this will be a continuing program, and that's why we chose this. When we were working with the governor's office and budget office to move a few of these forward.
Hey, I should ask you then, with respect to this one, why did you choose, in this instance, a Section 600 versus in technical services, so now you, as opposed to creating its own categories that have an identifier?
Madam Chairman, Senator Nicholas, that is because that is how we've been running the B-11 through our budget, is run through this, and we use a function to identify all of the expenditures for that grant so that they are identifiable separately. We could go either way on those types of things. We go back and forth within our agency as well as the budget office on how many units you want out there, as opposed to putting things that are like in the same budget.
I think in other agencies, let me ask you this. In other agencies, do we have a separate category, Corey, for just general fund programs, and we list them, and they kick out as opposed to embedding them agency by agency? And I want to think, for example, we have some DOE programs where it's just a federal fund pass-through expense organization so that all the federal, and then you identify them by category, but instead of embedding them in each 600, you just have a federal funds category.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Education is the best example that I can think of where they are segregated, as you indicated. I can't think of too many other budgets, quite frankly, where it's done in that manner. Most of the federal dollars that you see are tend to be like this, embedded in specific units, depending on how those funds are spent and what program they're spent for.
Well, I guess why don't you give some thought about whether or not there's a reason for that, or whether if we're going to authorize these dollars to flow through, if we just create a federal fund flow through. And if it's a matching dollar, that's different. I understand, for example, Department of Health is matching. I would never propose that be segregated. But in these items where you have brand new, independent, new programs, maybe we create a category for federal-funded programs. And so not to make them look like they're programs that we've authorized in the budget. And so those constituencies understand that it's federal dollars. When they go away, don't look to us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I believe we're on page 49 now with our next budget, which is our analytical services lab. We do have two exception requests in this section. The first one is on page 50. We're asking for an automated fat and fiber analysis system, I think for the total of $80,500. And the governor's office recommended a denial of this request.
Quick question. It says it replaces two manual units from the early 1970s, which some of us don't think that's that long ago. Why no reduction in employees to match? You know, it seems like you're doing less manual labor here.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Flatern, if I could have Mike Leith, the director of the Analytical Services Lab, touch that question. Thank you, Madam Chair. The next request is for a glassware washer to replace a unit that is repeatedly failing us for $22,600, and the governor is recommending denial of this request. Madam Chair, the next budget is page 54. This is the seed lab in Powell, and there is one exception request here, and this is for $117,988, requesting that to continue level of service for the seed lab at the current level. The governor is recommending approval of $50,000 as ongoing funding and recommending denial of $67,988.
Madam Chairman, what kind of revenues and what kind of customers do we now have on the seed lab?
Madam Chair, if I may, Dean Gailey, this is a budget that is with the University of Wyoming that we run through the Department of Agriculture. Dean Gailey is here to address those questions, as well as Don Richards with the University of Wyoming, if I may ask them to field those.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Don Richards with the University of Wyoming. We are generating a little less than $250,000 a year in revenue. The primary client is for reclamation seeds. About 62% of our seed certification is in the reclamation area, although our largest commodity seed is in beans, which accounts for about 20% of our clientele.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next budget is page 57. This is the groundwater state management plan. There are no exception budget requests in this item. Page 59 is our Animal Damage Management Board rabies section. We have no exception requests here. Page 61, we have rodent and predator control, and no exception requests here.
Madam Chair, can you tell me what a predator control device is? I mean, devices, that's the revenue that you have. I mean, what do you sell? What is exactly that?
Director?
Madam Chair, if I could have Hank Uden discuss our M44s and those devices.
Madam Chair, I also have Kent Drake with me. He's the current sitting employee for the Rodent Predator Management Program. But those devices, as they are, is operated under a purchase for resale. Typically, the M44 livestock protection collar, those are available to the livestock producers through our office. Historically, we had retained those devices on hand. Anymore, those are direct supplied from or provided to the producer from the supplier. But we do have to maintain signage, warning signs, those elements that have to be used with, in conjunction with those devices under the law for them to be legal to use. And that is what it's dedicated to in the budget.
So Madam Chair, Mr. Uden, you're really selling just the peripheral stuff. You're not actually selling the devices themselves. They're doing direct purchase there, because it is $1,500. It's not like a lot of money.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Okay, so then, Madam Chair, if I may follow up. On the next page, if I'm reading this correct, you have a special revenue or revenue of $33,381. So where is that money? How is that related or not related? I don't know either way.
Ms. Cook?
Madam Chair, in the past, when we used to sell these devices ourselves, we used to have to hold them ourselves, and that's the amount of revenue that we were collecting. In reality, we should probably do a reduction in this budget to get it more in line with our actual sales to date.
So, Madam Chair, just a quick follow-up. So the $33,000 actually, well, won't be in your budget this year, even though it's reflected as total funding of $48,000. We can probably take out about $32,000 of that.
Madam Chair, that is correct. It does allow us the ability to, if we do collect that sort of money, to expend expenditures in relation to that. But right now, we have not been.
Madam Chair, the next budget is page 64. This is our grain warehouse program. We have no exception requests in this budget. Page 67, our animal damage management program. We do have one exception request here. And we are requesting $500,000 to deal with, in anticipation of dealing with the wolf issue moving forward. The governor is recommending approval of $200,000 to deal with that and denial of $300,000. If you'll recall, inside the trophy area, the game and fish has authority over the wolves if moving forward under the proposed plan. Outside of that, the Wyoming Department of Agriculture has authority on predators. So that's the nature of that request.
Other questions on that? Representative Wallace?
Can you enlighten us on how you came up with the $500,000 figure and then maybe get some input from the to figure out why the governor thought that the $200,000 would be sufficient?
Madam Chair, Representative Wallace, I'll take a stab in it, and then if we if I can't clarify, maybe we'll go to some other folks. But we looked at some of the original numbers that the Wyoming Game and Fish Department had in the area that they knew that they were going to have to manage in that flex area and in the trophy game area. And basically what we did is we took those numbers and made an educated extrapolation off of those. We looked what they thought they needed and what we thought we were going to have to do for the rest of the 85% of the state. In discussions with the governor's office, as well as the Game and Fish and Animal Damage Management, which is probably how we would work this, we would have to go through that. We want everybody involved in how we're going to manage these predators. We went through our budget process, and we came to the conclusion that we thought $200,000 would be a good place to start. I'm comfortable with that number. But that being said, I think all parties know that it is a guess. The concern that we really have, Representative Wallace, is that, you know, in a lot of the places in that trophy area, if we have a problem with wolves getting on livestock, we're talking about radio-collared wolves. If we're talking about northeast or southeast Wyoming, the possibility of them being non-radio-collared wolves is significant, and digging those wolves out can get expensive, and we know that, and that is the biggest concern that we have is how often is that going to happen. We are not proposing in this budget to give indemnification money to ranchers. We are strictly talking about if a wolf gets on your place and we are a group of wolves and we are having a problem, how do we go get them out? So we work pretty hard with everybody involved to come up with the number and then reduce it down. That I think there are some other places throughout the governor's budget as a whole where wolves are being addressed as well.
Madam Chair.
Representative Stewart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So clarification that $200,000 you'd be giving that to the Fish and Wildlife to help you in controlling these predators then.
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, at least a portion of that, I think what we would like to do is work through the ADMB process and with predator districts. Certainly there are cases where that would be the most efficient way to do it. They've got the boots on the ground right now in order to do that. I don't know that it would be that way in all cases. There are some other local trapper type folks that we can work with as well, but we would be going probably through a rulemaking process and all those fun things.
Just to follow up on that before I move over to the senator, how long do you imagine spending on rulemaking, and when would you have this plan in effect?
Madam Chair, that is a good question. We have an ADMB meeting coming up here shortly. I can answer that question better after our next meeting when we have that conversation. I hate to defer like that, but I beg that you let me.
Sure.
I think it would be, obviously, it's a public process, so it would take a little bit of time.
Right. Mm-hmm. But that'd be great if you can get back to us on that. Senator Von Slatern.
So, Director, this $200,000 that the governor has recommended would actually not be needed, or could possibly not be needed, according to the latest federal bills they've passed. So we would see this. He's restricted it to wolves only. You're going to allow the money for game and fish or private contractors or the damage boards, animal damage management boards themselves, to expend through their own expenses. I think $200,000 is being pretty generous, seeing we're at least, we could be next, I guess we could be next spring with the wolves, and we could be a couple of years out with the wolves. So I thank you for your explanation on how you derived the $200,000, but we should see this still sitting in your budget probably a year from now.
Madam Chair, Senator Von Flatern, that is quite possible with what we are looking at. I don't know. I don't have the control over the federal processes. I wish they would move a little faster on that whole thing.
Like 20 years?
Yeah, ago. Is that? Yeah. So the answer, it is possible that it would be sitting in there a year from now, depending on what comes down. As far as the process, the control of the money comes through the Department of Agriculture. We work, ADMB is co-chaired by Director Talbot and myself. Certainly we want those folks' input on how that happens. My understanding of all the discussions, including from the governor's office, is that this would be specific to wolves. If I understood your question correctly, the intent would not to be, say, would not be to allow it for other processes on this $200,000. It would be specific to wolves. Did I understand you correctly?
Yes, you did. And I'm just trying, Madam Chair, I'm just trying to think how you would write some rules tight enough that it truly was expended that way.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine somebody up in their helicopter or their little plane doing some coyote hunting is not going to shoot a wolf in the process, or be out just strictly wolf hunting so they qualify for some of this money. It just, you'll have to write some pretty tight rules.
Madam Chair, I don't disagree that we will have to watch it carefully. We do have the rest of that predator money that we still have to address in this budget. I think the idea would be, certainly when, as we move forward on those other budgets, what we do there is they come to us with their proposal, what they need on whether it's coyotes or mountain lions, all of those issues, and then they come with a proposal. I think the vision is to have not include this $200,000 in that, the way we do that funding, but have a separate pool of money saying, okay, however the process, but we know you have an issue with wolves, we need it on the ready to be able to deal with a specific issue when wolves happen. I think our biggest concern is when we get wolves sitting on top of a rancher not being able to respond. That's my biggest fear. And so I don't anticipate just giving grant dollars out to, you know, in the same process each county board as they come in, but having a pool available for them so that when they do come and say, Rancher X has this issue, can you help? We can.
Go ahead, Senator Nichols.
Well, Chairman, once we put in this expense organization, I assume if the if you run out in your other programs and you're not using those, you simply move them over as you choose, or does it require a B11? I mean, how do we, in the future, how do you know what one category versus the other, if at all?
Mr. Mai?
Madam Chairman, unless you footnote this money, yeah, I'd say they could move it around.
Yeah. Do you have a note on that? Further questions? Continue.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Page 71. Is our next budget. We have, it's our Consumer Health Services food licensing.
We're going to go ahead and take a 10-minute break.
Okay. Fair enough.
You trained me so well last time. I'm rocking and rolling. You can get through me, I think. These wolves are going to be expensive. so much for a 10-minute break. Yeah. It's our goal. Go ahead, Jason.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. The next budget's on page 71. This is CHS, Consumer Health Services Food Licensing. In this budget, we've had an increase in the number of licenses that we are receiving since the inception of this licensure system. And so we're requesting the ability to spend that money as required. Page 74 is the pool and spa license, and this is a similar situation. We've had an increase in licenses, and we are asking for the $50,000 of the revenue that we're receiving. The governor is recommending approval of this. Page 77, this is our APHIS core program. There are no exception budget requests in this budget. Page 80 is our natural resource and policy budget. There is one exception request in this, and that is on page 81, the Rangeland Health Assessment Program. This program is underway. We are we currently have people out monitoring, and we're looking to extend this program. We asked for a total of $650,000 to continue the monitoring program for $400,000 and $250,000 to continue the education portion in conjunction with the Department of Agriculture and the University of Wyoming. The governor is recommending approval of $100,000 and denial of the remaining $550,000.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Director, and I see many pages in your handout addressing your Rangeland Health Program. And just a brief overview, how many assessments, how many projects do you have on the ground? How's it working? Do you have any milestones yet, deliverables?
Madam Chair, Representative Stewart, if I may, Chris Wickman is the manager of the Natural Resource Section and has been dealing with this since the inception very closely, if he could address that question.
Mr. Wickman?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'm Chris Wickman. We've received out of three RFPs for the original $200,000 of funding. We received 17 applications and funded. The Board of Ag approved 12 of those. The total acreages out of those 12 projects is just shy, I think, of 900,000 acres. There's about 13 different partners, including UW, NRCS. And various conservation districts, and so it's going really well. We're just building interest in it. We're building off of those successes. If I may, Madam Chair, about an example, Teton County Conservation District applied for an application of 88,000 acres. That allotment wasn't monitored for over 20 years. There was three sites identified in the original monitoring plan with the Forest Service. That project identified to go look and find those three projects or three monitoring sites, and they actually added another 20 in cooperation with the Forest Service to now further monitor that into the future.
So thank you, Madam Chair. So you mentioned some other partners. Are we able to leverage any other dollars from any of these other partners?
Madam Chair, yes, the Nature Conservancy actually provided in-kind plus funds for that. Most of the funding that we receive is in-kind. We provided $200,000 in funding, grant funding. We received about $193,000 in in-kind matching funds.
Representative Wallace?
Thank you. I haven't had an opportunity to go through the information that I see that we do have quite a packet here that I'm looking forward to going through. But it concerns me a bit that is the Nature Conservancy, I mean, who else are partners who are contributing from a financial stand or even in kind? And I'm looking for kind of a balance there where we're not being driven by what some would perceive as adversaries in this process.
Correct. In the situation of the Nature Conservancy, Madam Chair, they're already working on that allotment with that landowner for projects they're doing under the Water Development Commission. So they're already involved with monitoring. So since they were out there, they did provide in-kind, so that would be the avenue for that. I do have a list of all the different partners, if I could.
Excuse me, Madam Chairman. If that's in the packet, I'll just look for it and find that. My next question is, on that list of projects, is by chance the Granite Mountain grazing allotment on that list of things? And just start there and then.
I do not believe so, Granite Mountain.
Or any other of the allotments that you're working with, really looking at the wild horses and the horse management areas. I've been hearing from a number of permittees of late that BLM is not complying with the consent decree, that we have buku horses in places and have for years, and that the agreements, you know, dating back to 1993 when ranchers agreed to take voluntary reductions in order to operate and are now, you know, they continue to be squeezed, and we still have way more horses on those management areas than are supposed to be there.
Madam Chair, there are several of these projects that identify wild horses in them. There's a project out of Fremont County sponsored by the BLM that that looks at it, plus Little Snake River Conservation District's project would include the monitoring where wild horses are at. None of these projects specifically look at wild horses, but the monitoring data that they collect can actually benefit that
right.
Also.
Other questions?
Actually,
okay.
Specifically to this budget, so you had the $200,000, and you have been able to start these initial projects, and now this is a $100,000 one time. I assume that's spread over 2 years. How much is that going to limit what you're doing here? I mean, I know that we are facing continual the groups that are using Equal Access to Justice Act funds and federal tax dollars to put together what many of us consider to be rather shaky and biased data, and that we need these kind of things to counter that are not ceasing in their activities. And my fear is that if we don't have enough funding here to really protect our land and our people, that we are going to suffer as a result of that.
Madam Chair, that's our fear also, is that special interest groups are not going away and actually increasing their efforts. This effort does start to touch into that and help that process, and it is one of our biggest concerns with that.
Maybe if you could just touch bases with me offline later. Mm-hmm. Let's get a sense of what you think you can do with the governor's recommendation, and what that big picture is, and how we, you know, how many acres, how many people are we talking about, and what the risk really is of not doing a good job with this program.
And Madam Chair, I apologize for missing that part of it. With that reduction of what we're looking at, our grants are running $20,000 per grant. With the reductions, we'd be looking at funding maybe 2 to 3 projects a year under this, which would be a drastic reduction in those efforts.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our next budget is on page 86. This is the emergency insect management budget, and we have no exception to requests here.
Madam Chair, not to slow the process down, I just don't understand how 86 and 87 reconcile with each other, and I'm curious if somebody could explain the $1.5 million, what is that on 86, and then the $2.5 million is the actual budget number on 87.
Ms. Cook?
Madam Chairman, Senator, that would be my error. We did receive some additional appropriation to combat the grasshopper issue, and I just did not reflect that in my chart on page 86.
Madam Chair, that should say $2.5 million as far as the expected census general fund, and not, it doesn't generate revenue. That should be $2.5 million shown
yes.
General fund money.
It should. I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, the next budget is page 89. This is our pesticide registration program, and we have no exception requests.
Madam Chair. Another question there on 88, which is the summary of that budget. I've got 1.187, 1.5. Is there a surplus in this budget? Something. Where does the surplus go? Am I misreading once again?
Senator, Madam Chairman, we took a budget cut in this during the last budget cut that came through to reduce it down from the 1.5 to the 1.187.
So, Madam Chair, the actual budget is 1.187 as reflected in the table?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, again, page 89, no exception requests in that budget. Page 92, the Wyoming State Fair, State Fair Operations Budget. We do have two exception requests. The first one is on page 93. We're asking for $30,000 for the purchase of a four-wheel drive front loader. This loader would be used to be moving dirt in and out of both our show center as well as our livestock pavilion, other places. Right now, the means we have is pretty limited to do that. That is recommended for approval from the governor's office. The next one is dealing with the livestock pavilion. It's titled Completion of Livestock Pavilion. This is, we're asking for $155,000. To purchase some aluminum bleacher seating as well as a sound system. I'm in there. The bleachers would run about $60,000. The sound system is about $95,000. The idea behind that is to better utilize that building, not just during fair time, but throughout the year. The governor is recommending denial of that request.
If you had to break those down and prioritize them, which would be your top priority, the bleachers or the sound system?
Madam Chair, the director of the State Fair says bleachers. That's would be the first priority.
Mr. Director, it looks like a great fundraising project.
Yes.
Some donor could get their name on those bleachers.
Madam Chair, I've heard that before somewhere. Not a bad idea there. Other questions? Yeah. Okay, page 98. This is our non-fair budget. We have in the state fair budget, but the non-fair time, so no exception request there. Page 101, This is our highway weed and pest. There is one exception request, and it is for $200,000. This is to reflect our MOU increase with the highway department to spray weeds along along the roadways. This is money that comes to us from YDOT.
Madam Chair, just could I have an explanation of where those funds come? I mean, I understand YDOT, but what is the basis for YDOT? Where do they get them out of? Gas tax revenue, federal appropriation, something?
Don't know. Madam Chair, I don't know the answer to that. If I could get that information back to you.
Well, Jason, they'll be in here shortly, so
okay.
We'll ask.
You'll ask them. Okay. I can run in the hall and see where they. Yeah. Okay. I apologize for that. Page 105 is our predator management program. And we do have one exception request here. And the request is for $2,370,000 to increase our grants to the local predator districts in order to deal with predators. Again, this, as we talked earlier, this does not reflect the specific amount to wolves. The governor is recommending $1.2 million.
Madam Chair, one of the questions I've always had about this was we've never actually been giving facts and figures on, like, sheep counts, predation on the flocks. Are they better now? You know, you have less losses. Once again, we're going up another $1.2 million in this fund, and it would be really nice to have some backing as to what we've done, what justification for what we spent already, as well as what this will do for us in the future.
Okay.
Mr. Jones?
I'm sorry, I have another matter, Madam Chairman,
okay.
Not necessarily response to that.
Why don't you go with your first thing, and then we'll
keep going. On page 104, and it's again reflected on page 108, there is a correction that needs to be made in the context of the proposed exception request. You notice the agency originally requested $2,370,000. The governor's recommendation column should reflect a reduction of $1,170,000 for a net increase of $1.2 million.
Say it again, yeah.
Yes, the number, the $1.2 million that you see in column 6 should reflect a negative $1,170,000, so that the net increase in the governor's recommendation would be $1.2 million. And it's improperly reflected in tables on page 104 and on page 108.
And back onto the predator control report. I thought we usually receive a report on all of that information. Have we received it?
Madam Chair, I believe we have. Let me go back through my records. I think we've gotten one.
Yeah, I think so too. Can anyone from the group discuss it?
Madam Chair, Kent Drake is the manager of that program.
Okay.
Madam Chair, yes, I publish an annual report for you, but it doesn't address the concerns that Senator Von Flatern said on the predator reductions regarding sheep numbers and so on. The ADMB has had somebody do a publication like that. There's a new one coming up, but there's also National Ag Statistics. In particular in Wyoming, does that and has since the 1940s, and I'd be happy to share those sheep numbers. So there is some benefit to livestock and sheep. We're also seeing more increase from the wildlife management for some additional help with wildlife protection from predators.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just remembering some
issues, local issues in Carbon County with regard to, in statute, we're allowed to reimburse producers who would like that dollar back. And I think in Carbon County that's resulted in perhaps some budget shortfalls. Now, would this, would these dollars be able to help some of those counties or, and those boards supplement some of those budget shortfalls? I might need a follow-up, too.
Madam Chairman, Representative Stewart, these dollars would help that in your particular situation. They lose about $25,000 a year to predator refund requests. And I, and just for your information, the requests in refunds from livestock producers across Wyoming, 90% or better of those are out-of-state leaseholders. The ranchers in Wyoming very often not ask for any refunds. We also have a bill that's being introduced through the Joint Ag Committee that helps address some of that in statute, not all of it, but obviously these dollars would help with that.
Madam Chair, our next budget is on page 110. It's the Wyoming Beef Council. There are no exception requests in this budget. Page 115 is the Wheat Marketing Commission. We are asking for the ability to spend $59,746. This is reflecting, and Mr. Kennedy is here with the Wheat Commission to probably better explain this, but this is reflecting a little while back. The Wheat Commission was authorized by the legislature to be allowed to take more on their checkoff per bushel, and this is reflecting the ability to utilize that funding. Page 119, this is our leaf cutter B budget, and there are no exception requests here. Page 122, this is dealing again with Wyoming State Fair. This is grandstands, food concession facilities, asking for $124,890 to complete our renovation of the grandstand food concessionaire area. The SBC is recommending approval of this, and the governor is concurring. Page 125, this is our livestock pavilion budget. Also, the request is talking about completion of livestock pavilion and show center. We are asking for $785,000 to put a floor in, a concrete-type floor or asphalt, and then I think also some electrical services and plumbing issues. The SBC is recommending denial of the request, and the governor concurs with that. Page 128, we have a capital construction request again on the state fairgrounds for $250,000 to paint the exterior of several different buildings on the Wyoming State Fairgrounds, requesting $250,000. The SBC is recommending approval, and the governor is concurring. Page 131, this is our dairy barn and Communicom building, requesting $356,213 to complete the dairy barn. This is where our, at the state fair, this is where our, a lot of our vendors are with a lot of, that sell a lot of wares, looking at finishing that building with some HVAC and those types of things, but this has been recommended for denial by the SBC and the governor concurring. And the last one is page 134. We were requesting $112,500 to have some RV utility hookups placed where we are demolishing our old cinder block stall buildings, some of them anyway. The reason behind this, we do have a campground, as you're aware, but the reason behind this was to take the live-in horse trailers, as many of them as we could, and move them out of the campground into an area where they would not be in with the general public who's staying in that campground. But it was recommended for denial by the SBC, and the governor is concurring. Madam Chair, that concludes our budgets.
Madam Chair.
Yeah. Mr. Mai.
Dawn would like to point something out to the committee. If you guys can all turn back to page 96. She's got one thing I think she'd like to address while the department's here. That's okay.
Yes, go ahead, Ms. Agar.
Madam Chairman, again, on page 96, as Bill said, there was a request in the 11-12 biennium budget for state fair match monies, general fund match monies for the 100th celebration, which was intended to be one time when it was appropriated. However, it was left in the development of the standard budget, and the amount is $250,000. The line item where it appears is 0881 near the top in the fund shift fiscal line. I do believe that was intended to be one time, the agency.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So when we're doing markup, we'll need to make a correction on that. And you have it duly noted.
Yes, Madam Chairman, we do.
All right, good. And Julie, you concur.
Yeah, we concur.
Mr. Director, you have any other closing comments?
Madam Chair, if I could, since we are just on this line item, just for 30 seconds, if I could give you an update on where we are. Actually, if I could have Director Goodrich give us an update on where we are with our portion of raising those funds toward that matching, if you would.
Sure, and if you had further comments on the centennial, that would be great.
Madam Chair, James Goodrich, Wyoming State Fair Director, our current balance to date collected for the what we term the fundraising portion is $105,888.62, which our threshold was $100,000 to authorize us to begin receiving matching funds up to $250,000. So I am pleased to report that we have crossed that mark, and our fundraising efforts are going well, and we do intend to reach the $250,000 mark prior to fair time. We do have a special planning committee that has been in existence for roughly 18 months in planning the 100th Wyoming State Fair, and those efforts are beginning to bear fruit. We do have various subcommittees that are planning activities to include, which we had proposed in the beginning, participation from every county within the state with a county display and an entry in the parade, additional attractions and upgraded awards and incentives for participation in the state fair, not overshadowing continuing to pay attention to our core activities at State Fair, which, of course, are 4-H and FFA and other youth programs, which will be focused in those activities as well as other attractions, and as well as a permanent marker that will commemorate the 100th State Fair and serve as a centerpiece and commemorative marker within the grounds.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I probably missed my best opportunity to bring this up, but and this is a general question for Director Furnio about interstate shipment of state-inspected meat programs that I just returned from State Ag and Rural Leaders. We had the FSIS folks there dealing with that program. New Hampshire, Wisconsin, several other states are really pushing that effort. One thing they this particular administrator, and I can't think of his name at the moment, said he was not aware of Wyoming being one of the states that was looking into that. And you and I have had quite a few conversations about this. So if the change that the State Ag and Rural Leaders is asking for is to change the equal to, same as problem that we have talked about in the past. Do you have money in your budget to deal with implementing that program, either if we have to deal with the same as requirements, or hopefully they get this resolved politically and we can use our existing state meat inspection program?
Madam Chair, thank you. Representative Wallace, I think, and I'd like to ask Mr. Finkenbinder to jump in here and correct any of my misstatements, if I make them. But my understanding is if we are dealing with equal to, we are, again, in a much better position to be able to just move forward because they're accepting then what we are doing currently. If they go to same as, which I am interested in as well, but if they go to same as, or that's the tack that they continue to take, that is it's a whole different ballgame from the standpoint of they may be fine with our inspection, but they may not be fine with the building currently. That if, you know, it may be that federal, they may take it to the federal standard on the building, which may be a height requirement on the chute entrance of, you know, the loading dock, those types of things. So if we are talking same as, that it is significantly different, and no, I do not have the money to deal with that. And I would say we could probably come up with a way to do it from the inspection side. I think that there's opportunities there to do it. The question becomes what happens with those plants? How do we get them to make sure that they meet it? You know, if you're asking me directly how I would prefer, I would say equal to, because I think we're there today. I think, and as a matter of fact, I think as far as the inspection goes, in some of our plants we exceed, but it's not the same as, and that it just puts us in a real quandary. I mean, anytime we could get a market open for the folks in Wyoming that are doing business in a, you know, a very productive way, and doing it properly, I'm all for that. And I continue to work with that. I will be traveling to D.C. here in, I think it's 2 weeks. My schedule gets crazy here, but to meet with ag directors, that, again, will be a topic of discussion, I'm sure, with USDA. But continue to want to work with you on getting it so our folks can sell meat across state lines. Thank you very much for the opportunity today.
Okay. Thank you. All right, we'll bring in the Department of Transportation. And if you want to run out individually, I'm sorry. Good morning, Mr. Cox, and sorry for the delay. I think what we'll do is get started with introduction of your team and opening comments, if you'd like to do that before we break for lunch.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Madam Chair, and the rest members of the committee. Madam Chairman, what I'd like to do, first of all, I just want to say thanks for the opportunity to be here. I know that you folks have got, I think, much more rigorous schedules than we do here, and we sincerely appreciate the job that you've got in attempting to put together a budget for the state of Wyoming. So we don't want to waste your time. We want to make good use of our time with you. Madam Chair, if it's all right with you, what I will do is just quickly introduce the folks that are here with me today, and then maybe start with a brief introduction, and I realize we've got a lunch hour looming here. Madam Chair, seated to my right is Kevin Hibbard, and most of these are familiar names and faces. There have been a couple of changes on the executive staff of the Department of Transportation, and I'll come to that in a second. Also, though, before I go on with the executive staff introductions, I want to just point out the fact that we have the privilege of having the chairman of both our Aeronautics Commission, Vince Tomasi, and our Transportation Commission, Cactus Covello, with us today. I think they're in here. There they are. Okay. Did you guys stand? Cactus and Vince. Madam Chair, the remainder of the folks here today are Delbert McComey, our chief engineer, whom you're acquainted with, Tom Lofton, our support services administrator, Dennis Byrne, our aeronautics administrator, Lieutenant Colonel John Butler, who is the acting administrator for the Wyoming Highway Patrol at this time, Greg Frederick, our assistant chief engineer for engineering and planning, Ken Schultz, our assistant chief engineer for operations. You may remember Tim Hibbard, who has been in here the last several years in a row. He retired. Ken took his position. Sandy Scott is our commission secretary, our transportation commission secretary, and also the legislative coordinator for our staff. We have several others here that I won't go into introductions for, but just for the purpose of having subject matter experts, depending on how deep into the budget you folks prefer to go, we'd like to have the best source available of answers with us. Madam Chair, in terms of opening comments and kind of highlighting some of the priorities of the Department of Transportation for this budget cycle, I'll make a brief introduction of the department's priority request, and then I'll have Kevin walk you through the budget, and I assume that'll probably be post-lunch hour. If you would turn with me to pages 12 through 14, what I'm going to do is highlight several selected items on pages 12, 13, and 14. But as I skip over some, obviously if there are questions or comments that the committee wants to delve into, we can discuss any of those items with you.
Okay. Excuse me one. Senator Nicholas.
Thank you. Director Cox. On page 6, it is interesting to me to always remind ourselves that you're the largest state agency. We always think of Department of Health as that, but when you have 2,000 employees, a couple questions. Of your employees, what percentage are in the big plan and what percentage are in the law enforcement plans? Do you know those numbers?
Mr. Chairman, hold on just a second. Did you say something?
Yeah, 75% commission, 25%.
He's asking about retirement plan. Mr. Chairman, in the DOT, the only people that would be in the law enforcement retirement plan would be those who are sworn officers with the Wyoming Highway Patrol. So that would be a total of about 207 employees. The rest would be then in what you refer to as the big plan.
Where are dispatchers?
Dispatchers are predominantly, I think the preponderance of them are in the big plan. There are some who were put into the law enforcement plan early on. You may remember a number of years back there was an attempt made by Colonel Powell to get the rest of them all of them into the same plan, which was not successful. I don't know the breakout of that.
Grandfathered employees that got in, and then I forgot how they got in, but there's some grandfathers, but all new employees, all new dispatchers are under the big plan?
Madam Chair, that's correct. Center.
I'm just curious, when you look at the number of retirees out there, do you know what percentage of retirees or former YDOT employees? Or is...
Madam Chair, I don't have the answer to that question.
Sure. The thing is that we're going to continue to hear we hear about the number of employees you have now, your employment history. Did you give us a history of your number of employees in the whole agency in your packet?
Yep, Madam Chair, each of you has a booklet that looks like this, and it's the third tab in.
You know, I hear the statistics often that from one of my colleagues in particular, who is often critical of saying, look, you know, if you look at the number of staffing that you have versus miles of road constructed, your staffing's up, your miles are down, and that you're not adjusting. You've heard that criticism, I've assumed, or is this the first time you've ever heard it?
Madam Chair, Senator, that's the first time I've heard it in those exact words. A couple responses to that, a couple comments. One is that in the 2011 and 2010 sessions, during the cuts that occurred of vacant positions, the Department of Transportation was cut 113 total positions, including some that we regarded as, and these were vacant at the time, but some that were essential to us and has caused us some gymnastics to try and adapt to. In the larger sense, one of the things that many people don't realize is that when you compare YDOT, the Wyoming Department of Transportation, to departments of transportation nationwide, we have the widest wingspan of mandates assigned to us of any DOT in the United States. We are one of only two that has the state patrol as part of the DOT, and one of the very few that has what most states would call the Department of Motor Vehicles, what we call driver services and vehicle services. So the total, the breadth of the mandate is considerably larger. When you begin comparing apples to apples, our actual employee numbers, for one thing, it surpasses highway miles. Highway miles doesn't become a measurement other than on the highway side of the organization. But when you begin comparing, for instance, to other states, and I'm just using that as an example, it then becomes obvious that we are fashioned according to what I would call a Wyoming scale. We are much leaner than many states are.
All instances when we go through your budget, anytime there's a special, whether it's your tax revenue or whether it's federal dollars, if we deny a request and those dollars stay in your budget and they just go to road construction. So, I mean, I assume that you might tell us otherwise, but for all practical purposes, every dollar we fund for a new position, for a new program, is a dollar out of construction.
Madam Chair, Senator, it is accurate to say that in the larger sense, the balancing account for YDOT can be characterized as it's a highway fund, a state construction fund. And what that means is when we save a dollar, it goes on what we term as on the highway. When we have to spend a dollar, it has to come off of the highway. And so we're very careful internally before we ever get to the juncture where we're having a conversation with you, where we don't ask for that dollar to be approved on the legislative side unless we deem it to be a priority in order to serve the rest of the mission of the DOT.
What have you, and it may be that we get in later on just general, but terms, what have you had any success at trying to control your asphalt prices, and have you actually looked at going out? We talked about a year ago, maybe just going out and buying the asphalt, your oil, or essentially buying your oil as a commodity, and then your subcontractors would just use part of your commodity. Have you been able to control those asphalt prices? What have you done to try to control them?
Madam Chair, Senator, in answer to that question, in a straight answer to whether or not we can control the prices of asphalt, the answer to that is no, we can't. And, in fact, we did study, however, the idea of buying that as a commodity and found that that would not be cost-effective to do so. In the meantime, though, since the last time we had this conversation, I think we were looking at asphalt oil prices that were at well above $600 a ton a couple of years ago. That price has come down considerably, but it is a market-driven force, and it is largely driven by the demand and the production practices of refineries. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, if I could ask you to turn to page 12. And, Madam Chair, again, Kevin will go through some of the details of the budget a little bit later, but what I'd like to do is just take a couple of minutes with each one of several here, a half a dozen or so, budget priorities, beginning with number one on page 12. If you look on pages 83 through 86, beginning on the lower half of page 83. Our initial request in the budget was for six new positions in the Highway Patrol Communications Center, and the textual language there at the bottom of page 83 and on to page 84 describes not only kind of what the standard measurement is according to a known formula, but also gives you some idea of the previous strength of the dispatch center dating clear back into the 80s. Now, without trying to make any point of that at this point, what I would tell you is this, that during the time since 1988, the sworn component, that is the state troopers in the Wyoming Highway Patrol, grew to a total authorized strength of about 207 total troopers. During that time and since before that time, the actual number of dispatchers authorized in the WHP Dispatch Center became considerably less. Calls for service are up. We can get you a year-to-year or a 10-year look at how the calls for service, the demands on the service of the Wyoming Highway Patrol have increased each year. Traffic counts have increased. We can get you that information as well. But I think for the purpose of making my point as to the biggest reason that I saw fit to ask for additional personnel in the WHP Dispatch Center, if you look at the last paragraph on page 84, you'll see some reference about halfway through that paragraph to the dollar amount in salary and benefits that were paid over the 2009 biennium just for overtime in the dispatch center. Almost $700,000 was paid out in overtime to adequately staff the center, or to staff the center. Now, keeping on, just reading on in that same paragraph, it says there was over 4,600 hours staff hours in the dispatch center that were not staffed, which is to say that we've had that in those cases the WHP would have to assign one dispatcher to two areas of the state, for instance. I think there's a total of 8 radios in dispatch, and so they would have to double up those. What that's led to is not only the cost increase, which I know is your interest, but it's led to a tremendous amount of stress increase, and it's led to a higher level of turnover within the dispatch center because people are, frankly, only willing to put up with that for a given amount of time before they say, we just can't do this anymore. It affects their personal lives and also their professional lives, and what we found is that regardless of whatever manipulation in the work environment that we could introduce to make that a better place to work and to maximize the people that were in the dispatch center or their ability to take care of the duties, we find that we're just simply short of dispatchers. We asked the governor for 6 dispatchers, which is less than what we say we need. On page 85, you see a breakout of the costs. On page 86, you see the governor's recommendation. The governor is recommending approval of 2 of those positions in dispatch at this time.
Chairman, do you do exit interviews to know where are these dispatchers taking other state jobs? Where are they going?
Madam Chair, Senator, we do exit interviews, and the reasons for people leaving have already kind of been stated. It has a lot to do with the work environment being having the deployment of the people spread too thin. the future job destinations are really all over the map. We do lose people at times to the local 911 center here in Cheyenne. But just in case there are members of the committee that are not aware of this, the Wyoming Highway Patrol is one of, I think, only two state patrols in the nation that dispatch everybody from one location. Characteristically, state patrol agencies have a number of regional dispatch centers with all the accompanying equipment and people and all that stuff. So we're able to get some a considerable amount of efficiency by having it in one location. But we do lose employees to other jobs. I don't know what other state jobs would be involved in that.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Now, I'm just trying to track through the numbers here. We've got 268 people under the patrol budget, 207 are patrolmen. What's the balance? Is that your dispatchers and your other personnel then?
Madam Chair, Senator Meyer, the balance are not only the people in the dispatch center, but what would be referred to as the civilian employees and records, and also all of the entirety of the workforce within the ports of entry in the state of Wyoming. There are 14 ports of entry on the highway system, and I think I'm fairly accurate in saying there's about 95 employees spread across those 14 ports, some of which are 24 hours.
Madam Chairman, where do your when you pay your overtime, what budget does that come out of?
Kevin? Madam Chair, for the record, Kevin Hibbert, Budget Officer with the Wyoming Department of Transportation. In 2013, we anticipated $1.9 million, and that's what we have for request for overtime. In the previous year, we overran that budget, and largely due to the dispatcher situation. When an overrun of that nature occurs, what we do is we use labor that is generated from the vacancies of positions, and in the patrol business, filling a patrol or trooper position takes a little bit of time. So it's the vacancy of positions that we use to pay that overrun.
Madam Chairman, so your vacancy pays your overtime?
Madam Chair, we actually do have an overtime budget. In 2013, we're asking for $1.9 million. And then if we do incur an overrun, it comes from the vacant positions.
Okay. Where do you see that on the line item, the 1.9?
Madam Chair, if you look at the page 91, I believe the overtime is listed there. There's two items, L9101 and L9102. It's an addition to the total appropriated amount by position.
So 901 and 902, you say?
Yes.
Oh, we're back to on what page are you looking at? Well, the question is can we take in your budget, do you ask to have your OT reduced and positions increased?
Madam Chair, no, we have not. We've asked for a position increase with the help of relieving the overtime issue.
I mean, why can't if my question is simply then, if it's reducing your overtime, why not propose a reduction in overtime and an increase in paid positions?
Madam Chair, the anticipated amount of overtime is in excess of what we currently have budgeted in overtime. So we do anticipate having an overrun in overtime with the current budget that we have presented. We did not decrease the overtime for the rest of the Highway Patrol in anticipation of additional positions because we were experiencing an overrun.
These are all 100 series paid out of essentially highway funds?
Madam Chair, largely so, but there also are federal dollars that we use. We have highway safety money that we have to spend by federal regulation on overtime for such thing as DUI enforcement, construction zone speeding, and that's about $474,000 of that is federally funded, but the remainder of it is highway funds.
Chairman, So you say you can't reduce your overtime by having more positions because
the additional positions, would you still need your overtime, and you're actually using your vacancy money for that? But, I mean, how much do you typically revert out of your 100 series to go? And your such is not reversion. You just use it. What happens? Do you actually revert dollars, or they just be, you move them from the 100 series into construction?
Madam Chairman, technically it's a reversion, but really it never leaves the highway fund unless it's expended on the highway patrol side budget. And we do still have a marginal amount of money that's left in the 100 series budget or payroll in a patrol. And we do not cross over into any other expenditure. If it's for labor, it has to be for labor.
So I guess that's my – so if you have this pot of money right now that's meeting your labor requirements and you – I mean, what you're telling me is we could save money in our overtime, or let's take the pool. You say I have a pool of money. I could save money by moving, hiring more personnel to dispatchers, and that's going to save my pool, whether you save it in OT or you save it in your 100 series. Why don't we see a net increase or benefit back to construction? I mean, if you tell me that you'll – I mean, Kevin, if you tell me that, look, we'll save money by hiring personnel in this instance because of overtime, then you ought to say, here's the balloon of what I'm spending now, and here's a smaller balloon of what I'll pay later. If you can't show a reduction, then why not just let you work with the balloon the way you've been doing it? And you let it go back and forth.
Madam Chair, Senator, we didn't assert that we would save overtime money by hiring these positions. If for the purpose of the discussion, if we just assume for a second that we were going to fill all six positions that we proposed, the accounting that is given on page 84 and 85 shows, first of all, at the bottom of 84, said if personnel had been available, the additional overtime cost would have been $249.6 in the same time period. If you look at the lower half of page 85, it shows what we would project to be the cost of actually hiring those six dispatchers and funding their existence in the workforce. I'm not asserting to you that the hiring of six dispatchers, let alone two, would bring back to you a cost savings necessarily. What we're trying to do is get our job done.
I hear you, but so when you say it's, are you telling us then that you need to spend more for personnel in order to reduce stress, or are you saying you need to pay more for personnel in order to reduce overtime?
Madam Chair, I'm saying both.
Reduce overtime, then I ought to see a savings, and it ought to be an overall reduction.
Madam Chair, I would be more than if the legislature sees fit to approve the two positions that the governor recommended, I would be more than happy to come back to you with an accounting of what impact that has had on the overtime in the dispatch center.
Good. And, Mr. Cox, the other question I had for you, have you done a historical analysis of the overtime over the last decade? We're just seeing the one picture here of the past biennium and currently what you're projecting, what that's looked like based on the number of HP that you've had and dispatchers. I mean, not for today necessarily, but would that be worthy of just
Madam Chairman, we could probably compile those figures for you.
I'm just curious. I mean, overtime is kind of chronic for that division anyway, correct? Because it's 24/7. So a lot of that you can't predict. But if you're seeing a consistency in how much overtime you're doing, and it could somewhat be alleviated by X number of new employees, then we should be looking at more carefully, I think.
Madam Chair,
another way to present this to us.
Okay. Madam Chair, if I understand your, request, what we'll do is we'll just try to give you a historical backdrop of what the overtime has looked like in the dispatch center. Would that help?
I think so. I mean, that's the issue, right?
Okay.
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Go
ahead.
Have a sidebar going.
All right.
Is there a question on the floor?
Yeah, we're done. I mean, I've got the request in.
I guess my question then, going back to dispatchers, is you have a burnout rate. Are you having any difficulty filling the new positions?
Madam Chair, I think I'm going to ask Lieutenant Colonel Butler to answer that question. I don't know at this point. I know that historically there has been a difficulty. At this point, I don't know.
We have a microphone. There you go. Yeah.
Madam Chair, Senator, it has been a difficult task to fill vacant positions. By the time we apply and go through the entire testing process, we may have at the beginning 4 to 6 openings, and oftentimes, probably 95%+ of the times, we never are allowed to fill the vacancies we have. Usually it's somewhere in the neighborhood of half of the vacancies, and that's primarily set up by the stringent requirements of that position that we place on them.
Yeah, my question, are you having applicants for all your positions?
Yes, we're having enough applicants.
Okay. And the question I would have is the cost for us as a state to train that individual, and then if they have burnout, how long are they staying after we've trained them, and then we have to start that process over again?
Madam Chair, good question, and that's something that I will need to follow up on.
Okay, great. We are making an investment in them. Okay, Senator Meyer.
Yeah, I'm just curious how many vacancies the department has right now, and I know at one time we were able to retask those vacancies to a different job description, and I'm just wondering if that's a possibility or something that you've looked at.
Madam Chair. Senator Meyer, if you refer to this book here,
yeah.
There is a – bear with me just 1 second. Let me find it myself.
Excuse me.
No, he's asking about the department.
Madam Chair, as of December 31st, department-wide, of the total 2,230 authorized employees, YDOT currently has 2,059 employees hired and working in the workforce.
2,059.
Yeah, more than yeah. It's actually not in there, John. We didn't give them that. The actual statistic that I reported, I have in front of me, the total authorized personnel you have in your spreadsheet. So if you look at the spreadsheet that we provided you, that's under the tab 10-year employee history, you'll see that there's a total authorized strength of 2,230. And I've got notes that as of December 31st, of that 2,230, 2,059 individuals were employed in the Department of Transportation.
Okay. Further questions on number employees, Senator Meyer?
Just a little follow-up on that is that, yeah, how long have these positions, you know, your longest one's been open? I know we pretty much wiped the slate clean a few years ago, that anything over 2 years we just wiped off. Didn't know if any of these were approaching that two-year time period. Basically where they're at, we know some of them are in dispatching, but they're probably all through your agency, and I'm just curious about 171. Is there any of those that you could retask, lose those, and put in the dispatcher so we basically keep the same authorized position numbers?
Madam Chair, a couple questions in there that I'll try to answer. Senator Meyer, what we could do is give you really on a monthly basis how many vacancies there are in the department, and I think we could easily break down where those are. It's a very fluid situation because with that many employees and as many components within the DOT as we have, that's going to be a moving kind of a moving picture as 1 month leads to another. However, what was the second question you asked? Oh. with respect, Senator Meyer, with respect to the question about could we retask positions within the Department of Transportation to dispatch, the answer to that is yes. What one of the things that we undertook as an agency prior to the compilation of our requested budget to the governor and prior to our meeting with the governor was whether or not we felt like we could retask positions from one side of the agency to the other, or from other places in the agency to the Highway Patrol Dispatch, for instance, and driver services, which is another component that we're going to talk about today. The answer to that is yes. However, in any program that is legislatively overseen, obviously that still needs to come to you for your approval, even if it comes from within the agency. Also, there is a history within our agency of moving positions from the what's referred to in our world as the commission side of the agency over into the legislatively appropriated side of the agencies via B-11 through the governor's office or via a final approval by the legislature. So back to my simple answer, yes, we could. Okay.
$115. Yeah, let's come back at $115, please.
Where are you buying that?
And legislative group, I think. You-